And we're back.
We better get this episode in the can before this second Pfizer vaccine starts melting my brain.
How are your spirits, though? You feeling confident?
Spirits are good. It was nice. Went over to the Italian Cultural Center to get my shot, which was, it was kind of awesome because they were advertising like on the marquee, like,
oh, yeah,
vaccine clinic and like lasagna special, $12.99.
They do a really good clam linguine there.
Yeah. I was kind of hungry. I almost like it's straight good. Out of the vaccine.
Like a vongole.
Into the ristorante. It would have been very nice. Weirdly, I had this thought.
We should go there, actually.
Dude, this is really kind of sweet and dorky. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
But when I came out, I had this thought. I was like, I wonder, what if James was waiting for me in the Italian
that
restaurant?
That would be sick.
Because I told you I was going at 6:30. I was like, what if you were just there and you're like, let's go get a lasagna and like some wine. And like,
kind of want that.
But I was like, I walked out just, you know, in the back of your mind, you think things. I'm like, maybe he'll just be there and like, we'll do the pod in the restroom.
You know what, man? That would have been really nice.
But
other than the fact
you're
that
making music.
Other than the fact that we're, you know, busy working on the pump console. You know, I'm busy on that console. But after this week, not as much. I guess I got to do a couple of mixes, but after this week, no. But I've had a busy month. But, you know, you got to take it when you can. In this game.
Yeah. Well, and then next week, I'm doing a record.
Exactly, which is amazing.
So there you go.
Which is the whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's good, you know. And I feel like it's cool that, you know, our listeners get to, you know, like hear our journey through this goddamn impossible way of life.
Uh-huh.
And I really hope that we can really do this podcast at times from like Abbey Road or like from Ocean Way was a classic, or like with Rick Rubin in a kind of black and white room on like a mystery console.
They're essentially just doing a podcast, right? Like pretty much like,
I think so. I'm not really even sure what's going on.
It's not even at podcast level.
I don't think so.
No, like it's not even that professional.
No.
It's a, you know, high production value hangout, I guess is what you'd call it.
Yeah. I don't want to get into it right away.
No,
even
me
though
either.
We will. Welcome to Impossible Way of Life, episode 83, season one.
Wow. Season one, episode 83.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And if you like this podcast, you can go on our Patreon because that's where the winners win and the real musicians hang out.
Yeah.
We've kind of got like a kind of ladder system into rock and roll heaven. You can even be John Lennon if you want.
Yeah.
And it's official.
Yeah.
And everyone on the inside, you kind of the big bopper side of things, you know, they'll bestow that on you.
Yeah.
I think who else can you be? David Crosby.
David
He's not
Crosby.
Even there yet. Or is it just Rock and Roll Heaven's the final?
That's the top tier.
There's only one guy did it.
No, Brian. There's Crosby, Pricing, Brian Wilson, and John Lennon.
And then Rock and Roll Heaven is like,
that's right.
Is like $50.
Yeah.
And want to make it clear that they all, you get exactly the same thing from every single one of those.
Except the amount of respect you get from us.
From the blues community.
Yeah, and from the blues community.
Yeah, and you can see
which
you
is
can
us.
It. Well, it's kind of like you can, like a lot of people, like kind of if you go on like Gear Space, I don't want to dead name it, Gear Space, or like stevehoffman.tv, you know, you'll see a lot of time, or even just Reddit, you'll see people kind of like list their gear under or like under their names. It'll be like, you know,
well, that's
James
important.
Younger, and then it'll be like kind of like 72 Fender Strat black and white, like, you know, and then like kind of like
yeah, that's right.
69 Vibralux drip edge, you know, that kind of thing.
Nice.
And you know, Moog Model D, Moog Source, kind of like I go through DX7, kind of my 80s stuff, Matrix 1000. But also I've started noticing people saying like John Lennon tier pricing iWall Patreon, because it's kind of like a belt system.
It is. Yeah, it is. It's important. It's important. Well, we would like to know if you are a patron and you comment on anything, we'd like to know where you stand, what tier you stand on.
Yeah.
Because it will affect your credibility, honestly.
Within the community.
Yeah.
This community will not like, stand. This,
we're talking about a rock and roll heaven initiated patron here. Yeah. I'm going to listen to what he's got to say.
I'm
going
to listen to what this guy's going to say. Might even get him on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because this guy literally has access to rock and roll heaven.
I think if you're a rock and roll heaven patron for more than 1 month, that gets you a good 10 minutes on the show.
I'd say you can have the podcast, frankly. If you do a couple
episodes. You pay $50 a month, you could just do every episode.
And let's just clarify, that's $50 US as well, which is like about $300 Canadian at this point.
You pay me $100 Canadian a month, you could just do this.
You can have my apartment, frankly. That's all I got to say on it. But, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Jokes aside, it's a very good community to be in.
It is.
And that last Sunday episode, where we're kind of picking up where we left off. It was hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, we'd had a few beers. It'd been a while since we'd done one like that. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
because it was one of those things where I almost find it's almost, you know what they say? I don't know the right analogy, you'll think of it, but it was kind of, we went in, we said, all we've got here is a trailer for this show. Mm-hmm. We don't really have any material.
No.
But something happened. It's like when you threw us into that, it's almost like you're fighting for your life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we know that if we drop the ball once, it's game
it's
over.
It's hot potato, really.
Yeah, sure.
A little bit.
Treading water.
We're not treading water. We're swimming against the current with
That's what I'm saying.
You know, it's like Don Carpenter, the comedian, that whole book.
Yes. Sometimes if you have too much to talk about.
Too much perspective.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so I thought there was a lot of electricity in that kind of a thing.
Yeah. Your phone's kind of just going to mind.
I only have it here because of my intense notes about this McCartney.
Yeah. I just want to go through a couple of things that have happened this week.
Yeah, I was going to say that our community has delivered a lot this week. A big one for me, just to begin, was this whole Thunder Road lyrical debate.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. And also, I want to say to Ryan Pauly, I massively respect you and your input to this show, frankly, because you know, you are a regular contributor, and you get it, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate you, so thank you. Thunder Road.
Agreed. Yeah, Thunder Road. So he mentioned that there's a little bit of a scandal going on, I guess is the way I'd say it. That,
well, it's the only way to say it.
Yeah, everybody in the world, including, you know, big websites like lyricfreak.com.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the most sort of authentic lyrics to go kind of for you.ag.
Yeah, exactly. Think that the opening line is, the screen door slams, Mary's dress waves.
Yeah. It's pretty Springsteen-y.
Always how I sung it at karaoke.
Yeah.
Many times.
Yeah. I've seen you do it.
Oh, yeah. But
at the old Bimini's.
Apparently, yeah, John Landau, the producer of the record, has come out to challenge lyric freak websites or whatever. To say, no, the lyric is, screen door slam, Mary's dress sways.
I mean, it's...
And he was like, a dress can't wave, as though it's meant to be taken literally.
Oh,
it's not, you know...
And no one had ever...
No poetic license.
Well, no one had ever thought about that before. You see, a dress can't wave. So, in that sense, swayed.
I don't really honestly see how a dress can sway either.
It's a huge scandal,
I guess
though.
It can sway, but it can wave...
Yeah, like a wave.
Yeah, wave. You know,
like
when you wave
Wolf,
a flag.
The waves.
You know, you wave a flag.
Well, yeah, but you're waving it. It's like, no, like an ocean wave.
Yeah, or a flag with waving.
Waving in the wind.
Same as a dress. No?
Yeah, absolutely. So billowing.
Yeah, okay.
Which doesn't rhyme
so
as well.
Now apparently he's gone to the trouble of forcibly and legally getting all of the websites changed to say
it has to be done.
Yeah.
We're talking about Bruce Springsteen here. We're not talking about some schmuck.
No.
We're talking about America's Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, America's man.
Yeah.
But I asked Ryan whether Bruce, you know, had anything to say about this.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I guess if they're changing it, he must have weighed in.
But you would assume
nothing
so.
Public. as no. of yet. But yeah. we'll keep you informed.
Well, he's too busy. He's kind of probably too busy, like, harvesting his field right now in, like, I don't know, Wyoming or something.
At least on camera.
Yeah. Or yeah. whittling leather in Arizona.
In a commercial, yes.
Yeah. Or, yeah. like, driving his Jeep.
Yeah. Also.
To the middle.
In a YouTube advertisement.
Yeah. There's a place in America called Lebanon. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Lebanon. It's something like that. Afghanistan, it's the middle, Iowa. Yeah. It's the exact middle of the country. And I go there to whittle my leather bracelets.
It's like how Jeff Bezos is coming out saying how, like, he's like, you know, seeing the Earth from outer space, oh, it changes yeah. you.
Changes you.
You realize it's one Earth.
Yeah, nice.
Thanks, buddy.
Nice one. Thanks, man. Actually, though, I got to say, you know, that Earthrise photo, the famous photo yeah, of Earth, that, like, that on an existential level is always, like, I can barely look at that without kind of tearing up because I start thinking about, like,
it's gorgeous.
Here's the thing. Everyone is in the photo except for the person who took it. Everyone ever.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and it
yeah,
really
yeah.
on an existential level gives me like vertigo and oh, I get really like goosebumpy about it because it's like they're the only person who's not in the photo. And it's such a beautiful idea. Just by himself. And it's just taken on, I think it's a medium format camera.
Yeah.
He's just out. I'm an amateur photographer.
Did you remember that there was a TV show, it was quite good, called Cosmos that came out with Neil deGrasse Tyson talking about space?
Okay. No.
And there was a beautiful ending to this season where, because they sent the first ever satellite that left our solar system,
yeah.
it was photographing the entire time, the Earth. And you watch the whole thing, like as it just goes away with this Carl Sagan voiceover. Yeah. Oh, it really gets you, man. And it just, you know.
Yeah, it'll shake you. I'm just eating this last
I was shaken cracker. By some of the stuff in this show, too. Like
I was, too. There's some really good stuff in it.
I don't know if you... We're not ready yet. Okay, because I know. It's a good thing we're going to do... Okay, before we get into it, for those of you... This may either be good news or bad news.
Okay.
If you like the Beatles...
I've heard of them.
If you like when we talk about the Beatles, you're in for a real treat because we're going to talk about them all week long.
Yeah, well, probably actually for the next 3 months.
Yeah.
And because this is going to segue into the Lord of the Rings Beatles stuff.
Yeah, and if you don't like the Beatles and when we talk about the Beatles, then, I don't even know why you listen to this show.
Well, I'll tell you, there's certainly no music commentary podcast bigger than ours about classic rock anymore.
Yeah.
That's official. That's we're the top. Said. Unless it's Queen, it's all K-pop above us. We're top now.
Yeah.
Top
and
dogs.
To be fair, though, we are going to sprinkle in some Aerosmith and some Little Mountain Pump.
I can't wait, but yeah.
It's kind of hilarious that we're going to be doing Beatles and just like kind of late 80s Vancouver rock. Speaking of Queen, did you hear the other day? I saw an interview somebody sent to us.
Okay.
That Freddie saying he did not want to go to Rock and Roll Heaven. Shocked
me. That does shock me.
Yeah. They asked him, are you looking forward to going to heaven? And he said, no, I won't be going there.
Oh.
He's like, I'd like to go to hell. It's much more fun.
I like
that. He said,
think
of the people you'll meet down there.
Okay.
So I think we have to incorporate this into our theory that he chose.
So he's with Spectre?
He chose to go down there and jam.
Sadist. He liked cats, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
Big fan of cats.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love cats. Love them. I love cats.
What's not to love, really?
What's not to love? I have several cats. Hemingway liked cats, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible he's down there as well, based on his...
I would say. It sounds
based on his darkness. Anyway. I got a couple of things
written
down.
He wrote Standing Up, didn't he?
He wrote Standing Up. I think that was Kissinger, but it might have been Hemingway.
No, I think
by the
Hemingway.
End of his life, because he'd been so many playing crashes.
He probably
crashes.
Couldn't sit down.
Ken Burns' documentary is fantastic. I watched the whole thing. I loved it. I cried about 400 times.
I'm going to start the baseball one. I've got that on DVD.
Yeah, just get into it. You know, but also Criterion's doing that neo-noir.
Oh, I'm deep, buddy.
I know you're deep.
I'm deep.
We could like pivot to be like kind of like a, you know how we mash up stuff? We could sort of mash it up neo-noir with the Beatles.
Well, the way I see it is once we hit 100 episodes, anything could happen.
Anything could happen. It's true. No, it makes sense.
But
so you know that the Budokan in Tokyo,
yeah, of course,
is being used as a massive Olympic venue.
Okay.
Oh, I just thought that was kind of cool. I was like thinking about like the bands who've played there, and so like people will be like playing volleyball where like Dylan did his live record, Dylan, or the Beatles,
where Dylan did a Celtic version of "I Want You."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Was he wearing makeup at that point?
Haven't really seen photos from it, but I have the album, and it's
kind of like,
it's a real love-hate kind of thing with it. Luke can attest to this because we drove to Las Vegas one time. And
kind of Fear and Loathing style?
Alex was with us. So
not quite.
Not quite. But it was a, you know, because Luke, it was a quite a good moment that Luke and Alex didn't know each other that well, you know. And
what a better way to get to know someone than driving through the desert.
And I threw, maybe they hadn't quite bonded yet. And I threw on Live at Budokan, the cassette that I had. Oh, yeah. And I was like, oh, check this out, you guys. Like, I love this album. You know what I mean? And I guess it's kind of contentious whether people like it or not, because it's pretty out there.
Yeah.
The renditions are a little out there. And we listened to it for about an hour straight and nobody said anything. And Alex was in the back seat. She was just like, this fucking sucks. And Luke just cracked up laughing.
Brilliant.
And I think they high-fived. And then I tried to argue that it was good, but there was no way I was going to win.
Cheap Trick, Live at the Budokan.
That one's actually
that's
good.
Some good stuff right there.
Where did Deep Purple play when they did Made in Japan? Because that rules.
Let's just say the Budokan and be corrected by someone in our DMs.
Like when I said Too Legit to Quit was by Two Live Crew.
I don't want to bring that back. I said Public Enemy, I think, dude. I don't know. Hey, listen, this is a rock and roll podcast.
Was it MC Hammer?
Yeah, I think it's MC Hammer. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, MC Hammer doesn't have a ton of cred.
Great pants.
Yeah. Not a ton of cred in the hip-hop community, though.
Certainly not. It's kind of Vanilla Ice adjacent, maybe.
Yeah.
So I was down at my jam space.
Yeah.
I really wanted to tell you this.
Okay.
My sort of studio jam space.
Mm-hmm. I've been there.
Flex space.
I've been there.
And it was always fantastic there because it's a massive, massive space that is very fortunate to have. It's in an old kind of meat locker refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
Meat packing district kind of energy, fail attraction kind of vibes, you know? And recently, or in the last few months, a band has moved in next door. Now, there hasn't been any bands next door to us ever. So it's kind of destroyed the whole thing. And there's nothing we can do. Landlords are trying to make money. It's how it's going to be.
I've been in there recording things.
And they play like crazy clown, demented clown, viral clown music. They're playing like Mudvayne, like kind of viral clown as you...
Diseased clown.
Yeah, diseased clown. So it was like Mudvayne, kind of like really
puddle
intense.
Puddle of mud, stained.
Yeah, well, that's kind of more like emo clown. I'm thinking they're more kind of like...
I know what you mean.
Post-Slint music.
Disturbed.
Disturbed, yeah, exactly. Slipknot. So they're doing this, and they've been doing it for months, and it's a disaster. And I'm in there yesterday night, like trying to make some music. And I hear them come in, and I'm like, what the fuck? Oh, God. And I'm like, not paying attention, and I'm kind of working on stuff. And I realize they're doing a version of Sweet Judy Blue Eyes.
No way.
Like, they're just like playing, they're trying to figure out the harmonies to Sweet Judy Blue Eyes, which should only be done on coke. So if they weren't on coke, it's not going to work.
Because
I know personally from trying to figure those harmonies out, you need a lot of coke. And no one I know who's ever tried to figure out those three parts, no one, we don't own this coke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
but no one I know has ever figured that shit out without being on coke. Even at my friend's wedding, we pivoted to Helplessly Hoping. We were doing like 12 parts.
Right.
You know, like you, so they're doing it. I'm like, oh my God. And then it was terrible, really bad. But I can remember
like the full band.
Well, they were just trying to figure the harmonies out, but you know, it was the classic way of like, no, it's not this. I think it's this. And you could, I could hear the whole thing. Yeah, I was kind of like, this is kind of cute because I remember doing these things. Yeah. And then they did that for a bit, and then they started trying to play. They were kind of doing the four-way street version of it or something. It was really weird. And then they started doing Carry On. So I was like, they're just doing they've got into CSNY. And again, really bad. Like, they hadn't figured it out, and they kept stopping. Like, no, I think you're kind of like, love is cunt. No, it's same key, I think.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And I realized that they were doing reverse Clown. They were going from Disturbed Clown back kind of in time to the origins of Clown, which is kind of like they're kind of in the Clown adjacent world of Laurel Canyon. So they probably were like, yeah, no, it is a bit of a galaxy brain thing. But yeah. It's like they're going backwards in time. It's like, where does Disturbed come from? It's Clown.
But are you sure this is the same group?
It's the same band. They've just got retro, and it makes sense. That
maybe they're playing a wedding.
Well, a clown-based wedding.
See, I see what you're saying, because
it's a partial
lineage.
But I think
they may be a little bit off as to their clown origins, though. Like, yeah. I think you're right,
yeah.
Definitely. But if they're doing Disturbed and kind of Slipknot Stained kind of stuff,
yeah.
I think the first move is to go straight back to Doors.
100%. Yeah, like, that's no, you're right.
You
that's where it starts. Yeah, you're
you
right.
You go Light My Fire, like yeah. straight from
Whiskey, Alabama song.
Just straight into yeah. like,
they'd work in a set.
Yeah, it would. Yeah,
show me
it
the
makes,
way.
Makes more sense. This is the end. Like, just,
yeah,
it's kind of...
it does. Into, like...
Then maybe do...
The, like, Disturbed Genesis cover or something?
Yeah. And then eventually you get to, like, Help Me Rhonda or whatever, you know?
Yeah, like, Sloop John B or something like that. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was worth bringing up.
That's
and the last,
really good.
Yeah, it was really weird. Reverse Clown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a first for us.
Yeah, it is.
A band, well, it's clowny enough that a band in 2021 is doing like Mudvayne style.
Yeah.
That's almost reverse Clown in itself.
It is. Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to hear what they're kind of a...
Diseased Clown.
Yeah. Diseased Clown.
Viral Clown.
That's fine too. They all work.
Diseased. Well, it's got...
it is a diseased thing.
It's infected.
They're fully riddled with
clown energy, like it got inside them.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's true.
I would love to hear what their originals are like.
I mean, me too, partner. Me too. I don't think they've got to that part yet.
No,
I mean it's a big hill.
Well,
to
you
climb. You got
to
study your whole. It's like being like I was. I think McCartney says it. The person so Spinal Tap. The person that I can't do McCartney because his voice is too similar to my own. So I'm always going to do him in a Spinal Tap voice, and you can do.
Yeah.
Well, the person we all liked the most was Bach.
Yeah, I love that. Bach was the one we liked, you know.
Yeah, that's the one we liked, you know.
Because he was like us.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course, yeah.
He was the one. We said put a beat on it.
Yeah.
Why not put
Would
a beat?
Be better.
Be better.
Yeah.
Be better.
It'd be the Beatles.
That was so funny. That was. They were like Bach. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they were.
Never really got a Bach vibe off Beatles.
No.
I would say they're way more Mozart. Mozart's total pop to me.
So true, man.
Rum, bum, bum, dun, 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 dun.
I hope that's Mozart, dude.
It is, dude. It's very Beatles-y Mozart.
Okay, well, so we're taking the... That's like a... there's going to be so many DMs about you. Hot people being like, hot takes, like, actually, no. If you look at the magic flute, it's actually much more Doors than it is... anyway, like opening up the... Yeah, so we watched the first two episodes of McCartney 321, which is the new McCartney Rubin thing. Like, I guess podcast slash kind of...
film
acid trip.
Luncheon.
Lunch meet. But we both had to get Disney Plus. I actually had to pay for Disney Plus, so in the end.
Yeah, I've got my sister's account. Thanks, Maria.
Yeah, thank you, Maria. I love it that they don't waste any time. I've got some notes here, which is interesting. Cause,
I mean, before you...
Because I watched it in a fugue state.
I don't even know
where
to begin.
Well, I've got some notes kind of like in linear sequence.
Yeah, but I think before we even talk about the specific events, something needs to be said about what the hell is the reason this thing exists.
Sure.
Because to me, I'm wondering a lot about why Paul's doing it. Before we get, I want to get into the specifics, but I'm wondering, what's going on here? Okay.
What is going on?
I'm going to give you my hot take right off the top.
Please.
We all know about the Get Back, Lord of the Rings doc coming out, okay?
We've discussed this.
I think that Paul figured he needed to get out of the gate first.
Yeah, he's
and set the record straight.
Yeah.
The record being the record that everybody already knows about, that he was in the Beatles and did all this amazing musical work. But he needed, because he's afraid that he's probably seen the Peter Jackson doc.
He's getting out ahead.
And he's afraid that the Peter Jackson doc is going to maybe feature John and George as like the cool guys because they're dead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because they were the cool guys too.
And they were the cool guys. And Paul probably doesn't like the way he comes across in from that era, because he was kind of trying to hold the band together, a little bit pushy about the music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but here, get this.
Okay.
This is my take. So, the Get Back documentary was meant to come out last September, right? All of a sudden, it gets pushed to this August.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it gets pushed to this November.
Mm-hmm.
I think McCartney got his people involved.
Lawyers.
He's like, we got to fast track this Ruben thing.
His team's out.
Get it done. Get it out. So you can't put out Get Back until this has been done and out. So people have time.
Yeah, it's 100% what happened. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's getting out
ahead
of it.
I'm not actually joking.
I know. Yeah. And I think that it's like when you say, like, don't think of the black cat, like, you think of the black cat. Like, you can't. So he's like not mentioning this, but like, this is going to be the sort of paradigm in which you watch the Get Back stuff.
Yeah.
Because Beatles fans are freaks, like all of us. Everyone's going to watch both. They're going to see this first, and then they're going to interpret the Peter Jackson stuff through the lens of this kind of sort of strange, psychedelic. Well, actually, Rook made a note here. It's kind of cocaine v. peyote.
Yeah.
It's kind of two different drug energies on stage at the same time.
Well, the listening to music and sort of like air drumming and talking over
That's the cokey stuff.
Energy.
Yeah.
And then
the sheer confusion that Rick Rubin seems to have.
Rick Rubin's, well, his clothing is not, his lack of shoes.
He's kind of got a Wim Wenders Paris, Texas vibe. Like he was like a missing person for 4 years and just walked into this room.
Yeah.
You know, with no idea what's going on. And the first thing he does is he kind of walks in. He's not spoken to anyone for 4 years. People thought he was a missing person. And he just looks at Paul McCartney, looks at this console, winging it, because he's like, I got to look normal. But he's in shredded clothing. And the first thing he says is, you are up for listening to a bit of music? To Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. TV gold. And the Emmy goes, it's going to win everything.
What?
It will. It'll win everything.
Here's my thing. I think it's going to go down as the worst ever Beatles-related documentary.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. It might win everything. You're probably right about that. But I think that I've only seen two episodes.
Yeah, me too, yeah.
But
there was some heartfelt moments. I mean,
Well, this is the problem.
Yes.
The problem is that I love the music so much.
Exactly.
As much as it infuriates me, these boomers not letting go of their era and their legacy.
Yeah.
When you isolate the background vocals to Here, There, and Everywhere
as
and
much
play
of
it
that
for me,
as you
I'll
got.
Fucking watch it all night.
I'll
long.
Take as much of that
you know
as
what
you
I mean?
Got. Yeah. But even in those moments, Rick Rubin looks like he's kind of waiting for like the Pour Some Sugar on Me chords to kick in or something. And he's just kind of like, okay, yeah, nice. And he's just kind of waiting for like Beverly Hills by Weezer to like, don't know. Like, could be here
but
and there
they
and
add
everywhere
that.
To those chords.
Oh my God, dude, I just had an insane idea.
Yeah.
The two songs that they kind of feature sort of have that vibe.
Yeah.
Sergeant Pepper's only here.
It does.
It was Beverly Hills Go today.
Yeah,
I know
it's true, yeah.
It was Beverly Hills. And boom, wow, my guitar.
Yeah, that certainly does. And yeah.
That's the two they heavily feature in these episodes.
It's true.
So it's probably he's fulfilling his contract.
Yeah, and he's saying, like, I'll do this, but I need, like, I only understand music if it is the kind of four chords, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Four chords and the truth.
Yeah.
What's with Paul chewing gum?
Yeah, that's my number one note, too.
Okay.
Just FYI, right off the top. I don't know.
Yeah.
He likes gum.
Yeah.
Maybe because he smoked for 40 years. He needs an oral fixation.
Did he smoke for that long?
Well, he's, you know, maybe not 40 years, but definitely 60s, 70s.
You know, we, as a band, you know, we had to, you know, memorize our songs because we had to make them memorable because we had to remember.
We had to remember.
It's a subtle difference between stupid and clever.
At that time, you know, we couldn't record. There weren't these little devices, you know, to record. No. So we'd have to think of a thing. And, you know, we'd always sit around and sad about
listen
solos.
To Bach.
And listen.
Eddie Cochran. And it's a fine line. What's wrong with being sexy? It's a fine line between memorable and rememberable.
I love he's talking about, like, George. He's like, you know, me and George used to
hitchhike
and get some rice pudding.
Yeah. Ambrosia. It actually is a fine can of food. It's kind of post-war.
And
it's
a cute story, but he's like, we'd either have a
bit weird.
Camp stove.
Why is there a camp stove involved? Like, that's the best vignette they can come up with.
And then he says, you know, and if you look back, it's a bit funny that, you know, it's two of the Beatles.
That's a pretty weird moment.
What? I'm like,
dude. Well,
you know you're human, right?
Yeah, well, no, maybe.
You had a childhood.
But it's treacherous to live, like, within your own myths. And it is kind of, like, weird because, like, he is just a Beatle to him. It's like, and it must fuck your head up a bit. Like,
does,
being ultimately, like, he's just Paul McCartney. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like he can't help it.
I know.
He can't go anywhere or do anything.
But
kind of,
is
he loves it, doesn't he?
He's doing it to prove to us that he's a Beatle.
I agree.
Which is nuts because...
Yeah. It's like he's not comfortable
in his
role.
The amount of times he points out that he played
something. It's weird.
Why?
Was it bass really good here, actually. Like, he's neurotically, like, proving that he's as good as... Like, it's ego still.
Yeah. But here's
Yeah. Definitely pretends he wrote songs that aren't his.
Of course. That's
which
on
is
my list.
Fucking weird as fuck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really weird. Well, there's no one to contest that, is there?
No, and Ringo's nobody.
With a little
Ringo's
help from my friends, always thought it was a John song.
It's such a John song.
Yeah.
Ringo, Paul wouldn't write a song for Ringo.
The bass line is really good, though.
He's so good. It sounds like Carole Kaye. But he spends about 15 minutes soloing it for you to hear.
Yeah.
Listen to the bass line, actually. Because you got this ba, bam, bam, bam. You got this thing. But you need, and then you can play off it, right? You play Meat free Mondays. You know, freedom. We got freedom.
Free.
You know, free.
This is all right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Blues.
Given
but you just
by
play.
God.
You just play blues. E-G, whatever.
G-G,
I don't give a shit. Yeah, it's fine. You're George's friend.
Yeah, George's friend.
Yeah.
Now, was that Eric Clapton of Cream, or was it Eric Clapton George's friend?
Because Rick Rubin genuinely doesn't know if they're two people yet. He's not figured it out because he's on another dimension. I think he's on peyote. Or
he's got this smiling thing. You know who he looks kind of like? Allen Ginsberg.
Yeah, no, he's got a Ginsberg energy. Some of the greatest minds of my generation to the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And he's really like the part where Paul, they're in some other place and he's sitting cross-legged on the floor.
Really interesting seating arrangements. Like, you'd think there'd be a bigger budget for seating.
Yeah, sometimes they get in the chair.
It is really weird when he's like sat at Paul's feet as if there's like a campfire and he's high on mescaline or peyote and Paul's just playing like Martha, My Dear or something.
I don't know what he's playing. But it's weird to me because here's the thing. Paul McCartney must know that everybody who's a Beatles fan at this point, who still cares, knows the stuff that he did in the group, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So the only explanation I have is that he's trying to get kids into it.
Kind of the Rihanna style Kanye stuff he did.
Yeah. He's like, I need to like show the new gen. And that's why they got Rick Rubin. I guess.
Yeah, I guess. But it's kind of like, he could have got Dead Mouse or something.
Would have been better maybe if he, yeah, if he had like.
But Rick Rubin's kind of the, like, he's kind of.
That would
kind
have been
of,
funny, eh?
Someone who just doesn't know anything about it. And Rick Drake, Rubin's kind of like, what's the word? Like a causal connection between generations because he does still do like Adele and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
He does like, you know, big music. So like, you know, I guess they think of him as like a, like, yeah, like a branch between generations and people. And he's taken very seriously, right? Like he's like, he's a big.
Because he's done rap music and he's done metal. And
yeah. You know, and he's been on Tim Ferriss. It had a bit of that energy, that kind of like, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, 10,000 hours, like this is how you become successful. Kind of TED generation vibes.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, yeah. I don't even read music, but you know, if you just here's the chords, you do it and it's as simple as that. Which is kind of beautiful.
It is, but we know. Like,
yeah.
When he's like, I love when he's like, people ask me, well, how did you do this?
Yeah.
I mean, man, come
on.
You
know he'd choreograph
that. You know
how
to do it. We know how you did it because we do it. Like, musicians know, like, you don't need to fucking read music to make rock and roll.
No.
Like, nobody did.
No one ever did.
Nobody did.
But you're gatekeeping.
Randy Newman, Brian Wilson could.
Yeah.
A little. He wasn't even that good. But, like, it's not special. The Beatles are special. We know that.
Of course, yeah.
But that's not, it's, that kind of stuff is just pure feeling yourself. I had no time for it.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. You know, teaching people who are never going to play the piano, including like it's, I kind of find Rick Rubin's like sycophantic vibe, like
that's
detestable,
the weird part about it.
Like where he's just like, you know, if he has worked with all these people, obviously like you'd be in a room. I mean, you talk about that poker game you had with like Tim Heidecker. I mean,
yeah.
I wouldn't want, you can't make a joke around guys that funny.
Yeah.
You just stay quiet.
Yeah.
But it is like sycophantic. I mean, if I was in a room with McCartney, I'd just listen too. But if
sure.
he, but it must have been weird, like because like I feel like Rick Rubin doesn't come off with much self-respect by the end of it because honestly, yeah, like it's a crock of shit. Some of this stuff that's
he
happening.
Makes Paul look really cool, which I guess
yeah is
like
the main
at times,
point, yeah.
which I guess is the main point. Like
I wonder if
Rick
he
Rubin
regrets
is
doing
more
it.
Of a joke. In this.
I wonder if he regrets doing it because like he's so famous, Rick Rubin, and he's famously like doesn't do interviews and stuff. So they must have paid him a lot of cash to like look like a monkey.
Yeah, because Paul looks really like
oh, I'm a pretty chill guy.
Yeah. He's like, yeah. No, he's like, whoa. Rick Rubin's like, wow. And Paul's like, yeah it's good. Well, pretty good.
Yeah, and Arnold looks younger than him too.
Yeah, he does.
Weirdly.
Yeah.
And taller. They probably put Rick Rubin like stilts on Paul and stuff.
I don't know.
He looks Rick about like 40.
Yeah, no, the lighting.
He looks our age.
It'll definitely win for best lighting.
Great lighting.
Yeah. But... My thing, a great example is, and it's funny because I said the same thing, and I was like, damn it. When they play Sgt. Pepper's, the song on that console, it did sound really fucking rocking to me.
Of course.
And I was like, wow. I was sort of like, I had to pause it.
Well, because they'd done some Pour Some Sugar on Me chords underneath it.
Yeah, and I
so
was like.
So it's true.
The mix was pretty, and I was like, fuck, I had to turn it off and be like, Alex, Beatles are good?
Yeah.
Because this shit sounds fucking good.
Well,
and then, but the funny part is, and I was like, this sounds really rocking. And I rewound, I was like, listening to it. I was like, damn, man, I haven't played Sgt. Pepper's in so long. Like, this sounds rocking as hell.
Did you fact check it?
No. And then it was funny because then it's like Rick Rubin going, rocking hard. And then Paul's like, yeah.
In his fugue state.
He's Paul's kind of like chewing gum. He's like, yeah, guess you could say that.
Is it Joe Perry or something?
And the best part was like, this whole section tripped me out because I was like, Rick Rubin must be on some kind of psychedelic here because.
But an old world psychedelic drug.
Yeah, something, mushrooms or something because he doesn't seem to really understand how music could be created.
No, he's on
but
a,
he's a
quest.
Record producer.
Yeah,
because they're like, he's like, so with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and with a little help from my friends, did you have that like written all as one song? And Paul was like, no, like we put it together. And he was just like, that's amazing. Yeah. And I'm like, not really. Like they sound super different, and they just obviously put that little Billy Shears part in to bridge it together. Like, but you've made records. Like, what's your excuse?
Thousands of them.
Yeah, I don't.
LL Cool J records.
And like chili peppers and stuff, though.
The Pepsters,
like,
yeah. Los Chiles.
It's Beatles-y a bit.
I mean, Tom Petty certainly is.
Yeah.
You know, he made like Wildflowers.
He gets it. Yeah, like, he knows.
Well,
it.
It's sycophantic. He's doing the Charlie Rose thing he's like, get out. What are we even listening to? Like, as if it's just not music. Yeah. It's beyond music.
Yeah.
What is this? That's why I was pretty surprised he showed up for the second episode. I thought it was going to be Simon Cowell playing the same game with yeah, Paul McCartney. Exactly. It felt like that.
Rick Rubin lost.
Yeah, because he didn't get it. He didn't get it quick enough. I liked when it feels so heavily edited. There's like no scandal or shock anywhere. It's like when he's talking about, and I thought this was a bit of a dig. They're talking about like him and John, and he uses "it's getting better all the time" to describe the difference between them. He's like, yeah, you know, like I'm the kind of guy who's like happy and positive, like it's getting better all the time. But he's, you know, he wrote the verses, and there's some pretty bleak verses, particularly in that song, like about beating your wife and shit. Sure. And it's weird that he uses that as the example of the difference between them. Yeah. I thought it was a bit of an ego move to be like, yeah, like, he definitely wrote that verse, just so you know.
Passing
the
buck on that.
Yeah, I didn't write that. I didn't write, I used to get nail him away and I'd be like, he just like, no, I just wrote the chorus. He's kind of writing his own narrative.
But he's quick to jump to mention that he played drums on anything and everything.
Or like that he's possibly responsible for Imagine. Because he's like, this is how we played piano, you know, together. So like when John does it on Imagine, you know, it's just how we learned together, which is kind of a weird move. It's like, dude, chill out.
Yeah.
Let sleeping dogs lie.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
I didn't know he wrote Imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoyed learning. That was some new stuff to learn.
Well, there was a few weird things like that.
I wish my biggest problem with it, even though
it's your favorite TV show. Yeah.
I enjoyed parts, but is that I wish he was. I kind of wish if you want to go this deep, tell us a little bit more about how you did certain things than just that you did them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it was a lot of, like, I did this. Uh-huh. Like, and he's like, oh, check out this bass line. Good bass sound on this. I'm like, yeah, know. How'd you get it? Like, why not give us a little bit of technical
gear space talk?
Get nerdy.
Sound on sound.
These are the people watching. Uh-huh. Get nerdy. Tell us you rolled off the top end on the Hofner.
It probably isn't who's watching it, though. Like, who is? Oh, well, just, I mean, boomers. They're watching it for sure, but it's also just like boomer porn.
Yeah.
It's just guys being like, we really were the best.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
We really were there.
There he is.
There it is.
We're not even listening. There he is.
There he is. Turn it down. We're trying to eat our ribs and nachos.
Yeah,
right,
exactly.
Now.
Yeah. There he is.
There he is. Yeah.
He's one of us.
Yeah.
Our generation invented him. That's Alex's favorite. When she met a woman who said, oh, you guys like Bob Dylan? Yeah. Like her and Chelsea?
Yeah.
My generation invented him.
Somehow. Yeah. I like that. That's cool. Yeah. You know what? Michelle made me cry, though.
Oh, it's great.
Dude.
You know what made
me? Edith Piaf was kind of into it. Edith Piaf is a kind of French music, you know. So
I fucking love it. Yeah. I love
recorded
that
in an hour.
I love that John said, "Hey, that old French thing you used to do at parties.
Come on.
You should finish it."
Oh,
love it.
Killing me. And it sounds so good.
I'll tell you right now, I might get emotional right now because.
Well, it could be the second shot kicking it.
When the end happened. I had a really, really intense feeling when it ended with the footage of him playing Blackbird. And it was, you haven't seen it yet.
No, I just immediately started thinking of like a coked out CSN doing it. Sorry.
Oh, no. The very end is real footage of him in the studio during the White Album playing an alternate live version of Blackbird. Yeah. That's like, he's working it out and it's. And I just had this moment that I was like, as much as all this stuff like annoys me that he's doing this and it never ends, the music is so special and he's going to be dead soon.
Yeah.
And it just got me thinking about, you know, like, I don't know, just music in general.
Well,
and
I mean,
like,
that's all it's about, really.
Yeah.
It's all just about the music.
Yeah.
I mean, we've obviously,
it's
like...
It's so old, this music.
It
and
is.
We love it so
it's
much.
It's so old.
And it's like, we why do we love it? And yeah. why...
And we fetishize the artists because yeah. you have to. Yeah. And I think that that's a really important part of... I think it's a valid part of the canon because it's like... It's so inspiring and you want to know like, and this is probably like ultimately in like a serious way, like the problem with this kind of like boomer bait, like boomer porn, where it's like, it doesn't deal with the question seriously. Like, yeah, I want to know what it was like for you to go through this. And these like small snapshots and vignettes of your life. I like that. Like, mm-hmm. that's what I want mm-hmm. because it's like, they'll be gone soon. Like two of you are already gone. Ringo ain't talking about anything. I know there's been loads of books written, but like you've been pretty silent on it. And like, if you're going to do it, like tell us the truth. I don't need to see you obviously, again, like really weird, like choreographed bits where it's like Rick Rubin talking about reggae. For some reason he pronounces reggae, reggae or whatever. and then Paul says, well, you know, that's the thing about what's great about music. You know, if you do something, if you appropriate something, which, you know, it ends up just sounding like you. And then the end, the episode with Obladee Oblada, it's like such a passing shot at the Beatles because
know.
You know that that's the song that John Lennon famously is like, it's the worst song he wrote. So there's these really choreographed things where it's like, clapping back at things that you actually already know. It's like, tell us something new, man. Stop controlling the narrative. Like, give us, throw us some breadcrumbs. A bit of a cue thing. Throw us the breadcrumbs, man. Let us know what's going on.
And you know what? That's what it was. It was that
it's so
I was
heavily
disarmed by this moment where they showed Paul working out the song in the studio and talking to George Martin in the talk back. And I learned more from that 10 seconds than I did from the whole show.
Of course.
Because I was like, it was so emotional and it was a song I knew, but a version I didn't know. And the sound was great and the footage was great. And that's why I'm excited about Lord of the Rings.
Unless Lord
episode
of the Rings
four, I guess.
Is, again, like heavily controlled by the McCartney estate.
But there's no way Paul can control that to that level.
I mean, in a kind of different... But similar way, I was reading an article, like an interview with Ken Burns about the Hemingway thing and about like, you know, it's like kind of what he thought and like what he uncovered. And he was just saying like that it's like he had like such open access and he was talking about and it is there's this like really poignant moment in the documentary where there's this interview with Hemingway and like it's astonishing how vulnerable he seems as a human when he's so uncomfortable talking in an interview, like really uncomfortable, so uncomfortable that he'd written out his words and had their questions pre-given to him so he would only have to answer. And it's like you're seeing a person it's unbelievable because the myth of that person is so different.
Of course.
And Ken Burns says like, it was astonishing getting access to this footage because you're just like, this is the opposite of the myth we have of this guy. And I think with this documentary, it's kind of like, I kind of lost my way a little bit.
Thinking about the Get Back documentary and Paul's narrative.
That's not it. That's not it. You know, and I was losing my way with it. Oh, yeah, I remember what it is. It was that they asked Ken Burns, that like, is there anyone else you want to make a documentary about? He's like, I've always wanted to do one about Martin Luther King. Like, it feels like so important. But his family, and this is understandable, it's fine. Mm-hmm. They have such control of his estate that you can't tell a story that's honest other than the one they want you to tell. I've even met them, and at one point they changed their mind. I'm like, you know what? You can have unfettered access to this stuff. But I went and spent time with them, and I've had people like who work for me interview their family and his children, and it's just, it's not possible for me to make that documentary because they won't approve of it because they control his estate so well. And that's totally fine. That's whatever.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the McCartney vibe where it's like, you don't ever really feel like you're getting the truth about any of it.
Yeah.
It's really heavily bracketed based on his perception of it.
But our ability to interpret the truth is easier with that archival footage than it is with this.
100%. Yeah, because this is...
As Beatles this, aficionados.
Yeah,
well,
as, like, yeah, and you know, as our patrons are. This is all like... This is just a commercial.
We can read between the lines. This is essentially propaganda.
It's propaganda. It's boomer bait propaganda.
With lovely... pieces of music sprinkled in exactly. And the odd story.
Yeah, but, it is, yeah.
But, you know...
quote, I astound myself. He says things like that in it, listening to himself talking.
But I honestly finished it and I said to myself, I need to talk to James about
this.
Yeah. Because everybody who listens to this show knows I'm a massive Beatles guy. Anyone who listens to my music
knows
that.
Yeah, I've heard that you like
it. You know?
I've heard you're like, a fan.
And so I guess I'm just a bit like, I got to this point watching this lesson, I'm a bit kind of like, where does it end, you know? Where does it all end?
Yeah, you're getting black-pilled. You need to be careful.
Yeah. I am a bit.
You're going to drive a truck into like
I think Get
Liverpool
Back might kind of just like do it for me. And
that might
be
like, it.
That's it, you know? Like,
and you can get into like EDM or something. You just like get into MC Hammer.
Just be like, yeah, like now I'm just going to like this Joy Division or something.
Yeah,
like,
finally get
constantly,
there. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Or something.
Just get become a goth. As soon as we've watched it, you come back in here and you're just dressed like a goth.
Yeah.
That'd exactly. be cool.
Yeah.
I could see it.
Yeah.
I mean, I've already been through
just like 25 years too late, like because I got hung up on Beatles shit.
Yeah, but you could still go hang around with like Trent Reznor at the Cielo Drive House.
That's Beatlesy.
I mean, I love it that at one point...
he's hooked up with Ruben, hasn't he?
Big time. Yeah. I like it to do the Johnny Cash American stuff where he covers.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Because like Rick Rubin's in the same world as getting Frusciante to finally... so lucky for us that we got to hear John Frusciante and Johnny Cash jam. You know, what would we have done? If I was lucky
for Johnny Cash.
Well, yeah, of course. He finally got to jam with.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, he's on his way out, and Rick Rubin's like, listen, I got a guy you got to team
hook you up
with.
The best.
The best. Remember when you did Nashville Skyline? Forget it.
So Rick Rubin produced Blood Sugar Sex Magic, right?
Yeah. It was a great record.
That's probably their most Beatles-y album.
It's their white album.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, frankly.
You know the part that really kind of got me, best part of Rick Rubin's performance on this show?
Yeah.
Was at the end, I don't know if you've seen it, but you'll see it. There's a part where Paul is playing a new song he's written.
Oh, nice.
And my keen ear perked up because I said, this melody sounds familiar. Poor Paul. Yeah. And Lord knows I've rewritten songs and everybody has the Beatles.
Beatles.
And Beatles did too, is what I mean.
Of course.
But and Paul says, yeah, it's a new thing I'm working on.
Oh, yeah.
And Rick Rubin says, this is great. He says, you know, something familiar about it. It's like, not that it's anything else, but just one of those songs that's just kind of in the air.
Nice.
And I thought to myself, Rick, you're hearing what I'm hearing, and this is a song. And I wanted to put it out tonight to the patrons, to our listeners. What is the song that Paul's playing that he has stole? Because
At the end of episode two,
it is a song. The chords are the same.
And do you know it?
No.
Okay.
I didn't have time. We watched it last night.
Yeah.
I'll listen to it again. But
yeah, I certainly
if somebody
will.
Can tell me, because it's like not that hard.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So if we can figure out who that is, that'd be good.
Yeah. Paul's original one. It's called like Life is Hard or something.
Yeah. Not in the air tonight. Or something like that.
No. I
thought it was cool that Rick Rubin was like, I've heard, interesting he said this, I guess maybe he lives there. You know, I heard this like, you know, when Sgt. Pepper's came out, it was a time in Laurel Canyon where all you could hear one weekend was Sgt. Pepper's. And then I was thinking like, what year did Sgt. Pepper's come out?
67.
So I'm thinking, like, it's early PSYOP days for Laurel Canyon. So who's playing it? Like, John Phillips?
Well, Charles Manson.
Manson, big, like, a bit too much.
Yeah.
You know?
On repeat.
Well, he hadn't quite got there yet. Beach Boys.
That was more White Album.
Yeah, he was really into the White Album.
I did think that was pretty, that would be pretty epic, though. I love that they, like, Beatles, like, didn't even, like, announce the release or something. He's like, yeah, just put it out. Everybody bought it the next day. And then what about the Hendrix stuff was kind of interesting.
That was a nice nod, actually.
To Clapton.
That was a nice nod to Clapton. And, well, Clapton, I'm a bit worried for Paul, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Because at one point when they're talking about, they do choose some really interesting songs to go over. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because I guess there's just lots of songs.
Yeah.
But it's weird. And his stories about George Harrison are quite charming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that he says, I thought it was generous of George to let Eric in. You know, as if, I mean, I guess, like, it's obvious that they're like, they were the Beatles. Even
yeah.
if you were in Cream, it's like, you know, and I'm just think like, what he's doing there in his way of controlling the narrative really conflicts with another guy who's really trying to control the narrative, famously basically trademarking blues. And I don't think Eric's going to like the idea that it was generous of George to let him play
Ooh.
On While My Guitar Gently Weeps. I think he's going to be like, I'm just worried for
Paul. I
did them a favor and everyone knows it. You know what I mean?
I think that was more Paul like responding to his own ego, saying it was generous of George when he could have done it himself, because Lord knows I would have.
Yeah, but I also think that I can't imagine Clapton he's in is going to like the idea that he was. And he takes two shots at Clapton, because the other one is Jimmy trying to get Clapton to tune his guitar.
Which I loved.
For him. Oh, yeah.
I also love that
Can
Jimmy
you tune
did that.
This?
Hey, is Eric here?
Bitch.
Can you fucking tune this
you
shit?
You fucking loser.
Let me fucking play.
Yeah, I'm going to play a great version of a song that came out yesterday.
Yeah.
Can you fucking tune this, you loser?
Tune this thing
he was
out.
Hiding it. He didn't want to be seen because he's so famous.
Hey, man, I need a new fucking tuner. You want
I need
the job?
A new guitar tech.
Yeah.
Can you do this
you want
for
the
me?
Job, it's
You
open.
Want the job. It's about as good as you're worth.
Hmm. What happened to Jimmy? Hmm.
Yeah, exactly. That's yeah. what I'm saying.
The evidence just keeps coming out.
Well, you're just looking at this, classic interview you sent me by Eric Clapton.
Yeah, that's a nice one. In his prime era that
well,
I found...
Well, in his Microsoft era.
Yeah, Luke's favorite, where he says kind of like the high watermark of blues. 94.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Quote, this is him talking about blues.
Yeah.
I was in it to save the world. I wanted to tell the world about blues and to get it right. I thought, yes, I am God, quite right.
I love this. In this guitarist interview from 1994, Slowhand looks back on the early days with John Mayall, the Yardbirds, and Cream, and explains why blues was the only education he needed.
That's actually a nice nod from the... I feel like, hopefully... The journalist knew how funny that was.
Looking great, though, he is in these photos.
No, it is a good look, and that's kind of like a look that's going to come back, for sure.
Yeah, I think it should.
Yeah.
A lot of flowing patterns, what is Luke always saying? Flowing patterns.
I don't know.
Pleated styles.
Yeah, pleated approach.
But, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty amazing that
oh my
like,
God, I'm just reading through this.
It was his job, his sort of messianic vision was to tell people about blues because no one had heard it before. Maybe they hadn't. You know? Maybe he kind of took it from the Delta. Truly.
Well, that's what he says here. It says, well, the first thing that rang in my head was black music. All black records that were R&B or blues oriented. I remember hearing Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, Big Bill Brunzi, Chuck Berry and Bo Diddley, and not really knowing anything about the geography or the culture of the music. Then I found out later they were black, and they were from the Deep South. And that started my education. In fact, the only education I ever really had was blues.
Blues, blues, blues.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's kind of cool, I guess, in a way.
Yeah.
Do you think that Paul McCartney's potentially just remixing all these records with Ruben?
I think Rick Rubin. Oh, for re-release?
Like, he's done it with Let It Be already.
Best of Paul McCartney, it's going to be called, but it'll be Beatles songs.
Well, it's like, Sgt. Pepper's has already been remixed. It sounds really good, but it just sounds like a Tame Impala record, if you listen to the remix.
Yeah.
It's really cool,
maybe
but
maybe he's going to put out, I could see it, Best of Paul McCartney.
And gets a few John songs?
No, it'll be like, well, even if it's just All My Love and Penny, yeah. It's kind of fun. That'll be his way.
Michelle.
He's been vocal about the fact that he doesn't like that it's Lennon McCartney.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's like the best of McCartney and Lennon, and it's his stuff.
And some John stuff.
Yeah. But with the stuff that he
co-wrote.
Or the stuff that's like furthest away from what he wrote. The best John stuff.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's possible. Yeah, man. I mean,
I love Paul.
Dude, I love him so much. I can't wait to watch the next two episodes and do a podcast on it. Probably for Sunday. I doubt we're going to leave this until it's done. I mean, we've got to see it through.
Big shout out to Trevor Spencer.
Yeah.
Who I actually invited to come on for one of the next two about the show.
Sure.
Because I don't know that he will. He's, as he put it to me, he likes being a behind-the-scenes guy.
Yeah, well, he's a cameraman, right?
He's a close friend, which is why I invited him on. But he's a music engineer.
Yes.
And he...
he's not your documentary guy.
No, that's Andy.
Andy, yeah. Trevor's
Trevor lives in Seattle.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I know where we're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
he's worked with Father John
Misty,
the man closest to being a Beatle.
Just produced the new Beach House album.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Great band.
Amazing, talented guy.
Yeah.
Sweetest man you'll ever meet.
Can't tell you the amount of plug-in presets trying to sound like Beach House I've bought over the years. I should have just been asking him the whole time.
You should have been.
Yeah, exactly.
But he has been texting me a lot about the show, and I can just tell he's a Beatlesy guy, and he's got a lot of thought. A lot of people are sort of like, this is a big Beatlesy year with this and the Get Back doc, and a lot of guys
huge.
Like us that are kind of in our 30s, and we're like, okay, like we're thinking about this again or something. And Trevor was a bit emotional. We were texting last night. He's like, I just finished it. Like, I want to like talk to you about it.
Yeah.
So I said to come on, but he's like, you know what? I'm kind of more of a behind the scenes guy. I like to talk to you about it and then kind of hear what you and James say on the show.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
As a lot of our patrons and people are kind of like, they contribute behind the scenes.
Dan from Montana.
Yeah, from behind
those
the scenes.
Guys, yeah.
And I said, Trevor, you're a bit more of a kind of a Jeff Emmerich type.
Big time,
than a Paul McCartney.
You know, there are George Martins in the patron scene,
too. And me are more kind of straight up John and Paul going.
Yeah, absolutely. You're bearded Paul.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And I'm like John in his prime.
Yeah, exactly. And then, I said, Trevor, you're more of a Phil McDonald type. You know?
Yeah, and then Andy would be kind of like a Pennebaker.
Yeah, exactly.
And we've got to fill out the roles, and that's what we do on Sundays.
Our patrons, yeah.
Absolutely. So
Andy's definitely straight up Pennebaker.
Okay, so he's him, and anyone wants to be Ringo? Anyone wants to be Yoko?
Had like Luke is kind of a George Harrison because we have him on a lot, like as a guest.
I guess
guest,
he's George.
Know?
Yes, he does 3 of every 100 or something.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah,
cool,
yeah.
Man. Well, I hope you feel well. I hope you don't get sick tomorrow.
Thanks.
And
excited
you
to watch
go
next
and eat
two.
That pasta that you have at home.
I plan to.
Okay, man.
Okay, bye.